99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Thursday, birds, and welcome to the latest edition of the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster, back at you with another week of Redbird Sports Talk, National Sports Talk, and so much more, fellas. It's a pleasure to be sitting in these seats with you once again.
Yeah, I mean, there's just nothing like a Thursday night in Fell Hall. The vibes are always set. We get through our classes. We calm down here, just ready to chop some sports up, and it's just the best feeling of the week.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long week, but there's been a lot of sports that have been very good so far this week, and there's a lot of good games coming for college football and NFL this weekend, so it's going to be a pretty good episode tonight.
Yeah, a lot of stuff happened this week, but we're just going to stick strictly to sports here. But if you want to text us, you could text us at 309-503-1033. Once again, that is 309-503-1033. If you want to chirp Joey for probably having a bad take, being last in pick six, still, no, I'm just kidding. But just text us. And while you're at it, also go to Instagram, vote on our social media poll on the story tab on Instagram at WZND on Instagram. We have our pick six game of the week picked by you, the people. All right, let's get into this. We are in full swing with basketball season. We're going to talk about the men's in a little bit, but I think we got to start off with the biggest one of them all. Women's basketball officially kicked off their season last night in Chicago. Excuse me, Evanston, should I say. It's near Chicago, though. And they played Northwestern, a Big Ten team, and the Redbirds. Starting off 1-0, beating a Big Ten team in the Northwestern Wildcats, 81-77. Could not ask for a better start if you're Kristen Gillespie and this team.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, this is what we like to call a statement victory. I mean, the Redbirds, they had success last year, but didn't get as far as they wanted to as they failed to reach the March Madness tournament. And then losing Deanna Wilson is kind of like, oh, what's this team going to be this year? Is this going to be the same quality of team we've seen in the previous seasons? And then opening day, you travel to a Big Ten opponent and get a win. That's massive. And just a player we need to shout out was Shannon Dowell. She had a lot of hype coming off her freshman year because her high school state championship, she won that NCFQ arena and then decided to become a Redbird. So there's a lot of hype around her name. We saw a little bit of her last year, but we figured this would be the season where she would take that big step up. And boy, did she ever.
I mean, this is a big win, not only for this team, but this program in general. When you could go and recruit people for saying you beat a Northwestern team, yes, it's Northwestern. They're not like a huge sports school in general, but they're still a Big Ten team. It says a lot for your program and for a lot for your recruiters coming in. So now as a coach, you could be like, hey, we just won a Big Ten game. We're trying to build off of that, and we have younger people in this program that we're trying to keep building and win. Hopefully not only a conference win, but to get to the tournament as well. So this could honestly be a very good start, not only for this year, but for the program moving on forward.
Yeah, I just think it says a lot about where this team can go in this direction because they don't have the easiest out-of-conference schedule as well. Like, they play Marquette, they play Boise State, they play St. Louis. So it's kind of an intimidating schedule to walk into. But if you can beat a Northwestern quality team on opening night, it just really says the quality of Illinois State's basketball team.
And just think about, like, that, those are some big-time programs that you just mentioned. I mean, getting a win against Northwestern is already huge to begin with. But, you know, what'd you mention? Marquette, Boise State, a lot of big-time powerhouse programs. And really, I think the biggest thing of it all, looking all the way past, like, looking forward towards the end of the calendar, you know, when they won the regular season conference 2 years ago and ended up losing, I think Drake ended up winning getting the March Madness bid for the Missouri Valley Conference that year. But there was a real debate about, you know, this Redbird team won the regular season conference. They had a big win against Wisconsin that year. Once again, just like this, if you're beating these powerhouse programs, if it comes to it, come March, it's like, hey, you know, maybe we didn't end up winning the Missouri Valley and we came in second or whatever it might be. Maybe we won the regular season conference tournament. But just getting wins like this, it's already bolstering up your potential chances of, you know, having a bid in March.
Yeah, and that's really what you got to do, especially if you're not one of these, like, power conferences. Like, I've been kind of doing a little bit of research of an article I wanted to do, and I was looking at the 2016-2017 men's basketball team. That team lost 7 games and didn't make it to March Madness because they lost in the championship game, despite having an incredible resume like they did. And so, like, when you're out of conference, you need to bolster schedule and get these power conference wins when you can, and that's what Illinois State did last night.
I mean, you guys are exactly right. Every single game in basketball matters at the end of the season just based off of rankings in the playoffs and the rankings in the conference. And winning big games like this could help bolster pretty much your seeding at the end of the year, but you still got to get through those conference games. Those conference games are what matters the most. But when you're going to other teams like Northwestern, Boise State, Marquette, games like that, if you win those games, you're pretty much setting yourself up for a very good season because your confidence is going to be huge going into those conference games.
We're going to be covering this women's team all year. A lot of new faces, but you know they are on the perfect track to start this year, just getting a win at Northwestern. Couldn't ask for anything more. Let's flip it a little bit and talk about this. Oh, do you have something else to say?
No, let's talk about a team that could have asked for some more.
Yeah, right? Let's talk about this men's team. On Monday night, they officially opened their season at home against UT Martin. They lost 67-65 in one of the weirdest games, I think, that you could really, really describe. They were leading by two at halftime. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I think it was 31-29 was the score at halftime. And I think in the first 10 minutes coming out of the second half, the Redbirds only scored 4 points, and UT Martin just started to run away with it and ended up flipping and started to become this super close game. But just not what you wanted to see out of this Redbird team in night one, and hopefully they can learn from this.
Yeah, I'm going to nerd break it down for us. Like, I know we don't really talk about statistics because, you know, like, we run off vibes and aura here. We don't really run off statistics. But Illinois State last season, the team averaged 20.8 three-point attempts per game, and they shot 41 on opening night. Coach Peden, we've talked about it before, is what he talked about this whole offseason. This team is going to shoot three-pointers. That's what his major emphasis was. And when you do something like that, it's going to be a rough transition in getting a new identity. That's not really something that happens overnight, especially when this is the opening game of the season. So I expect a turnaround for these Redbirds. And plus, when you shoot that many threes, some nights are going to go in and some nights they're not going to. It's going to be a streaky team. And hey, you did a terrible job shooting the ball and you still only lost by two. So I still think it was a bad performance. You got to beat UT Martin, but there still are positive signs to be seen with this team.
Yeah, I mean, from just watching that game, because all three of us were at that game doing different things,
yeah.
But watching that game, this team just is still trying to find their identity after losing some key pieces last year. And you have a lot of new guys coming in. A lot of them made their names known, like Dodery. He played very great for a freshman. He came in, played really good. Yeah, other guys coming in playing good too. But shooting 41 threes and only making eight, that's just not a recipe for success throughout the whole season. I think a lot of those shots were really good shots that just didn't fall in. I think they're going to go in at some point during the season. But you can't be a team shooting 41 threes because you got to understand when something's not working, you got to have a different play style.
Yeah, what did we say? They shot 0-14 coming out of the second half.
That's correct.
That's crazy. I mean, they were not afraid to shoot it. They were shooting it all day. You said, what, 41 times?
Yes.
And when Malachi came on 2 weeks ago now, or three, I think it was two, you know, he mentioned, we want to score in the first 5 seconds of the shot clock. Mm-hmm. When they first came out, it felt like we were kind of seeing the slow Redbird offense again that just kind of takes a while to develop. But then towards the end of that half, especially when Jack Doherty came in, the freshman, who was just, I think, one of the shining stars of that night and really one of the big things to look at going forward, I think that we saw an offense that was making three-pointers. They were scoring quick, and it looked really good because that's how you really want a college offense to run. You want to be quick. That's the teams that win March Madness. It's really the teams that score as soon as possible so they could get to the end of the floor, defend, get the ball right back, and score right again and try and blow teams out.
Yeah, that is the pace you want to play at. But this was my big takeaway from the game is ISU is trying to foster a Miles Foster replacement.
Yeah.
Because they shot 41 three-pointers and just 21 shots inside the paint or in the mid-range. Yeah, you want to shoot more threes in today's modern age of basketball. That's just where the game has evolved. But when that shot's not hitting, you need something that can get in the paint, and they simply could not have. I thought when Chase Walker was in the game is when the team looked the best because they were just able to dump it into the paint and he was able to get free baskets, but he just isn't able to play 38 minutes a game. It's not going to happen. And when I look at this Illinois State roster, I think this is what's going to be their biggest weakness is outside of Chase Walker, the big man's just not going to be there for him this season.
I think I want to mention a couple players that it's only night one. So,
oh, of course,
you know, things can change, but just some things to keep an eye on, I think, going forward. He was mentioned as an all MVC freshman last year. Johnny Kinzinger, not his best debut at the beginning of his sophomore season. He ended up playing 32 minutes, 9 points, but shot 1 of 10 from field goal range. Another thing that I thought was really interesting, I don't know if it was injury related, but Malachi Poindexter only played 12 minutes.
Well, he was in foul trouble.
He had
like three heading into the half, and then he got his fourth like a minute and a half into the game.
Yeah, that's definitely, okay, that makes sense then. I was confused for a second, but now that you say that, that makes more sense. But I think the two shining stars, we already kind of mentioned Jack Doherty, but I also think Ty Pence played a crucial role in that game as well.
Yeah, absolutely, because Ty Pence did the one thing, I mean, that nobody else could do. He was willing to attack the rim. He was getting there at will, and he was able to score a career high. Yeah, a lot of that came at the free throw line. But when everybody's chucking threes, you need someone that's able to switch up the pace of the game, and that was Ty Pence. And he had a massive opportunity. Bowden Skunberg and Brandon Lee both missed the game with injury, so it was time for someone to step up and take that elite role player role that Illinois State was lacking. And Ty Pence was able to provide that, and if we didn't have a player like them that was able to attack the rim, we would have lost that game by double digits.
Redbirds men's basketball season will continue to move forward, and I think that, you know, while there are some negatives, I think there are some positives to take away from that game, and I think they're only going to get better as the season goes on. Once again, there's a lot of new pieces in there that I think still need to develop, and they really need to mesh. Before we go to break, let's take a quick look at this Illinois State men's football team. 23-16 win over Youngstown State this past weekend. You know, I think the scoreboard makes it seem closer than it actually was, because I feel like it was just all-out domination from the Redbirds. You two are on the call.
Yeah.
Yeah, two great figures were on the call. And my big takeaway is this game should have been won more convincingly, but Illinois State, they just left the door wide open. We're asking the Penguins to waddle back in and make the game close, because in the fourth quarter, they were throwing the ball when they didn't need to, and then Wright had the bad fumble, and that's what let the game be close.
Yeah, I make it. You could slowly see that this team is finally finding their identity. They found their quarterback. They didn't play Rubley at all this game.
Yeah.
So Tommy's finally been that guy now, and they finally get the ball to Sopkowicz more and more as this game went by. And the biggest thing with this offense is that they just need to get their guys involved. Get your guys involved that are actually making new plays, and we can just see what concludes when you do that. You let Sopkowicz make some plays. You let Lloyd make some plays. Winkers Wright make some plays. All those guys got the ball in certain times, and they actually won the game from doing it.
I mean, you shouted out Sopkowicz, and we just need to enjoy his presence, because he was just running that whoever offense. They just said just throw him the ball, and it doesn't matter if I'm defending him, if it was 6'8", if it was the Great Wall of China. He was coming down with the ball. It did not matter what the coverage was. He was catching it, and that's why you got to get key players like him involved, because he just had a him day.
The catch he had in the first quarter was insane. He, like, mossed two defenders. Yeah. It was awesome.
And then they got a little too greedy and said, oh, let's try it again, and threw the interception. Right.
Yeah, you can't do things like that. When something's working for your offense, you got to just hold on to the ball and just make sure that you're taking time on the clock away from the other team. You can't just like bomb it two times in a row, three times in a row. Do it one time, yes, then just keep performing your offense that's been working throughout the whole game, and that's just really just works for the Redbirds that way.
Three more games left for this Illinois State Redbird football team. Northern Iowa this weekend. They are at Northern Iowa, then they're at Indiana State, and then their last game, Senior Day, will be on November 23rd here against North Dakota. And really, I think the key and really what everyone's kind of circling at this point is, yeah, they might have blown their chance at potentially getting a home playoff game, but you just need to get really two more wins out of these next three and you're in the playoffs.
Honestly, I talked to my insider sport or my insider source for this, Steve Sees, and Steve told me that if you win eight games, you're going to get into the playoffs. And Northern Iowa and Indiana State, they're gimme games. So it should be games you can win. And North Dakota, we were fearing them for a little bit, but they lost the Penguins the week before we played them. So it's a beatable game. If ISU can come out of the season with 9 wins, who knows where they could be ranked in the playoffs.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see. We're going to 100% continue to keep an eye on that one. But when we come back from break, we are going to be talking some NBA basketball. Stick it right here on the Red Zone. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster ready to break down the early season of the NBA. It's been a good start for some, and by some I mean a lot. It's been very impressive for some of these teams, including the Cavs, the Celtics, the Suns, the Thunder, the Warriors, all those teams. Celtics are the only one out of those teams with 2 losses. The rest of them have 1 loss, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are off to a 9-0 start. But I think the biggest storyline that everyone's been following regarding this basketball season thus far, and really just it's really interesting to see. There's really two teams that I think right now at the bottom of the Eastern Conference that I don't think anyone expected to be get off to this slow of a start, in the Philadelphia 76ers and the Milwaukee Bucks. But let's get into the Bucks first, because we were talking about in the office before, there is a lot of drama in Milwaukee for a team that won the championship, what, 3 seasons ago now?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it 2?
Yeah.
a lot of drama in Milwaukee, a lot of talks, potential Giannis trade talks, firing Doc Rivers. It's all over the place, and I know these two guys got a lot to say about it, so let's hear it.
Yeah, I'm sorry for everyone that did not have a microphone in that office, because me and Julian were having a full-on conversation. There was a lot of back and forth. We were having some fun. But this Milwaukee Bucks team just keeps making mistake after mistake after mistake, and it really blows my mind. Is their last coach, they were able to win some games, but they didn't really respect him too much. It's like, all right, let's get a new coach. And you bring in Doc Rivers, who is maybe the biggest sell job to ever grace the NBA. Whenever it's a serious moment, he sells. And now they've just completely fallen apart. This team is ancient. They are so old. Like, I know they were the Bucks, but they were roaming with the dinosaurs. Like, that's how old this team is. They're completely falling apart. Their stars aren't there. Giannis isn't enjoying the team anymore because his brothers aren't there or something like that. Like, this team is just a colossal mess.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at this team, ever since a couple years ago, you could just tell they have a timer on them. Mm-hmm. They're one of the oldest teams in the league. They've been getting older and older every single year. And you pretty much have a guy that's 36 or 35, Brooke Lopez, in the game playing center. You have Giannis, who's still a top three player in the league, but he can't do everything. Chris Middleton's always hurt nowadays. Mm-hmm. And then Damian Lillard just doesn't want to be there. So it's all dysfunctional, but at the same time, you have no youth to look forward to in the future. Mm-hmm. And at some point, they're just going to have to let it all go.
It's kind of, I think the big report that came out of it, and we touched on it a little bit, but earlier in the week, we saw a potential rumor that if the Bucks continue to struggle, Giannis might force his way out, which is interesting considering this is a team that once again won the championship 3 years ago. But you know what we're talking about here. We're talking about the soap opera that is the NBA. And I thought Giannis would be a Buck for life personally, but as the days go on and the losses continue to add up, does it feel more and more increasingly likely that Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to be traded at some point this season or maybe at the end of this season?
I mean, to me, I think Giannis, for the best thing in his career, is to get out of Milwaukee, because this team is pretty much stuck in no man's land, and their management's not doing anything for him, his coach is doing nothing for him, and at some point he's got to say, I got to take care of myself and get out of there. There are going to be a lot of good teams that could be good options for them. I know Joey talked about the Thunder being one, but I just really think that there's other options where he could go to try to really make a name for himself, like Golden State. Once Curry's gone, he could be the new guy in that whole system. And then you could see other teams like, I don't think the Knicks are going to be one because they've already made big moves already, but I think he's more likely to go out west somewhere and just try to be a guy out in a new team, a bigger market, because in Milwaukee, he doesn't have really that big market standpoint from him. He needs to go to a team that has a higher market and be the guy again, because he's not really a two. He's a ball-dominant guy, and he needs a ball in his hands at all times.
Yeah, I'm going to stop dancing around the point. I'm going to get to what me and Julie were talking about. Giannis has to be an Oklahoma City Thunder. It just makes the most sense. They have so many assets they can give away. And yeah, you can talk about building this team identity. Let's be real. It's 2024 soap opera. I do not care about your team identity. I care about winning games. And the Thunders, they have a million young players. They have maybe a bajillion draft picks. And a lot of these young players don't even play. You can afford to trade away J-Dub and a couple of these young assets and some picks. And suddenly you have the best big three to ever grace the sport of basketball in Giannis. Giannis, Shay, and Chet.
No. I don't really. First of all, I don't agree with it being the best big three of all time. You got to look at Miami. You got to look at Golden State. But on the other side, you got to build up your team's chemistry, because these guys are all under 25 years old, and they've been getting better every single year. And you cannot stunt somebody's growth by bringing in a dude that's won MVP already, won an NBA Finals. He's not going to let Shay develop. He's not going to let J-Dub develop. He's not going to let Chet develop, especially Chet, because he's going to take all that space away from him, and he's going to become a spot-up shooter. This team needs to keep building what they have, and they're going to let guys go at some point. Guys are going to come, and guys are going to go. Mm-hmm. And having these picks are going to bring in so much better, like, quality talent, and that's why they got to keep what they have.
You know, but here's the thing. Like, you can have all these young guys, but you need a leader. When you're in the playoffs and you have all these guys who haven't been here before, you need someone to lead the way, and that is Giannis. That's a former MVP who on one of the most impressive playoff runs we've seen from a player individually. And if you add that player to the Thunder, it's just they're the most unstoppable team we've ever seen.
The thing that I look at this Thunder thing, and it's very, like, a valid point. They have all this draft capital. They have players that could thrive other places, but they don't really see the opportunity just because there's so much. It's such a youth movement there, obviously. But the thing that I think that pulls me back from the Thunder, and Sam Presti's the GM there, if I'm not mistaken, right? So if you're Presti, right, doesn't it scare you a little bit that there hasn't really been like a big three or super team that hasn't worked out really since Kevin Durant went to the Warriors? Because, you know, in the last couple of years, we've seen the Nets try and do it by bringing together all those three guys. And, you know, the Bucks tried to do it, obviously, with Dame and Giannis. And my biggest thing is just, like, I like the way that the Thunder are building their organization, because it feels like they're almost taking like a page out of like an MLB team's book. Like I just look back to the 2016 Cubs. Mm. Yes, they made free agent moves, but the core of that team was like a youth movement where it's like all these young guys that you're going to have around for many, many years. I just think that it might work better if they continue to stick with that.
No, but here's where I disagree with that point. Like, yeah, these other teams attempt these big threes, but the Brooklyn Nets, they have this big three, and then started, like, DeAndre Jordan. That's where it went wrong. Like, yeah, you can have stars, but you need to have role players around it. And the Thunder, even when they trade away players, will have that. They're still going to have the likes of Hartenstein. They'll have Caruso. They can have Jalen Williams, Dort, Wiggins, Joe, Wallace. They have so many assets. It's ridiculous. And at what point is it just a waste to have these assets?
To me, look at who's won the NBA Finals. A team that's been homegrown throughout every single year that they've had been. Yes, they got Jrue Holiday, but Caruso's kind of like that Jrue Holiday piece where he's bringing the whole team together.
Derek White, Porzingis, any of their bench players.
Are those guys on the level? They're not on the level of Giannis. These guys can make moves for quality players, but they don't need to make that big splash where they're trading every single asset that they have. They could just keep building what they have
right now.
And
I think the same thing goes back to not only the Celtics, but the championship winner 2 years ago in the Denver Nuggets. That was all homegrown with pieces that they brought in free agency that just made the puzzle work, I guess.
But at some point, when are we just wasting assets is going to be my point. Like, I look at a team like the Houston Rockets, for example, who have 11 really good players, but at some point, these players are just getting wasted when you could trade it for a star and have a legit chance. Yes, the Thunder have a star in Shea, but if you build a big three of Shea, Chet, and Giannis, it's just unstoppable. And it's not like a team where like they would have to go all in to do this. They would still have assets if they made this trade because that's how many the Thunder have. It's ridiculous.
To me, this team was a one seed last year and was one of the youngest teams in the league that's been growing their chemistry for so long now. Why would you really just try to mess that up and pretty much do what the Clippers did and trade all your equity for one guy? Yes, it's a completely different team. It's a way better team than that Clippers team. But any year you go into the NBA and you see these teams just make moves for these better players, it just never works out. KD didn't work out for the Suns, or because
it could
because they've been pretty good this year. But you just look at all these big moves, and none of them really just work out. You just got to keep building what you have because the chemistry just really does matter in the NBA. Because let's look at the Celtics, look at Golden State. Yes, they brought in KD, but that was a free agent move where they didn't have to give up anything because they built that team from the ground up. That's what matters more in the NBA now versus other sports, really, because you need that chemistry from the beginning. And I think OKC's future is sky's the limit for them because they have so much to work with.
No, but this is where I disagree with the both of you guys. Yes, I agree with the chemistry part. I'm not trying to hate on that. But you guys keep saying, oh, they're going to have to go all in. They're going to have to go all in. They don't have to go all in. They have weapons or, excuse me, assets that all these teams have just never seen in their lifetimes. They are billionaires compared to, like, homeless people. That's how much assets the Oklahoma City Thunder have, where they don't have to go all in. They will still have weapon after this trade. This is a team that can afford to take this risk. And this risk, you get a three-peat, no question.
Yeah, but when you're trading for a guy like Giannis, the other team's going to demand exactly who they want. And it's going to be Jalen Williams, who I think is going to be a great NBA player one day. It's going to be probably Topic, who I think could be a good quality player. Kayson Wallace. It's going to be a few guys plus their picks. And if they're trading a few guys plus their picks, they're not going to have as much to work with because Giannis' contract is huge. They got to pay their guys in the future again. So I just don't think it's going to work out contractually, salary-wise, and it just doesn't really make as much sense to me.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Shai already got his extension.
Yeah, he did.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely something to keep your eye on going forward with this whole Bucks situation. It seems like a mess there. There seems like a lot of dysfunction. They just have not been able to find a coach since Mike Budenholzer, and even Mike wasn't.
I just laughed because they brought in Doc Rivers like, oh, we need a new assistant. Let's get the guy that completely failed on the Lakers and bring in Darvin Ham. This will fix. Yeah. It's like, this team's a joke.
I want to ask you this, though. You guys specifically, you know, we're talking about the Thunder. The Thunder were obviously the number one seed in the NBA last year, but what are some other teams that you think are maybe flying under the radar, or more specifically, teams that we should circle that, like, they're kind of going to make that Thunder-like jump similar to what they did last year? Not the jump, but, like, just a team that you circle right now and say, like, hey, they're a lot better than people are giving them credit for.
Well, I think they're getting the credit for it, but I have to show love to the Cleveland Cavaliers because this team was dysfunctional last year. Like, they had a great roster on pitcher, you know, when you had Mitchell, you had Garland, you had Mobley, and you had Allen. People were like, oh, this team is awesome on paper. But that just did not work on the court. It got so clunky, and everyone was not able to do their role. They brought in a new coach in Kenny Atkinson, and this team just looks rejuvenated. Like, this is easily the best team in the East right now, and I'm not surprised that this team can compete with the Celtics in 7 games.
Yeah, I know this team's record isn't that great right now. They're 3-6, but I think the Orlando Magic are going to make a good jump again this year. Paolo Banchero, he already dropped 50 points a game in the game this year, all right?
He's hurt, though.
He's hurt already, but, like, that sucks. But
when they can get healthy, man, they're going to be good.
They got so much young talent. Jalen Suggs just got his contract. Wendell Carter was performing well before he got injured as well. I think this team, led by Paolo, who I think is going to be a superstar in this league, I think they could be a top 4 to 5 seed again this year. And I think they could make a pretty good upset in the first and second round.
Yeah, I'm going to be for real. I think they got to aim higher than a 4 and 5 seed. I have so much higher expectations for it. Because, like, this team is so great defensively. And all they needed was Franz Wagner to take an all-star leap and for Paolo Banchero to take the star leap. And Paolo has 100% made that leap this season. That guy, I mean, I don't want to get too crazy because I know he's not going to be this good. But he just plays so similar to how, like, prime LeBron did. That's how, because, like, he can pass, he can attack the rim, he can somewhat shoot, he can defend. Especially for his size, you can't really teach that stuff. He just is the complete package.
I would love for you guys to fill me in. I try and keep up with as much basketball as I possibly can, but there's so many sports going on. I would love, and you already mentioned them, so I feel like you have enough to talk about them, but I want to know more about this Houston Rockets team. You know, they have Jalen Green and Alfred Sengun, who are, like, two rising stars in this league, and they're obviously anchored by Fred VanVleet. So what's the deal with them? 5-3, it feels like the tides are turning in Houston finally since they've departed ways with James Harden all those years ago.
Yeah, the Houston Rockets, they just have a billion weapons. It's ridiculous. Like, their, like, second-string team would probably be a playoff team in the East. Like, their second string could consist of Reed Shepard, Cam Whitmore, Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, and Steven Adams. Like, that's a starting-caliber team in the playoffs, and that's coming off their bench. And you look at the starting lineup of Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Jabari Smith, and Sengun. There's a lot of talent there. What this team lacks is an actual star. That's their biggest problem. It's like, yeah, they have all this talent, but who's going to lead you when the times get rough? And that's what the Rockets lack. So, like, this team, they are knocking on the door so, so freaking hard. They just need one star to open the door for them and lead them to the championship route.
Yeah, this team just seems to me like they're so close right now. But
so
you're exactly
close.
Right. They just don't have that guy that could lead them over the edge. But a guy that's been really good this year is Jalen Green.
Yeah,
I've been waiting for so long to see his breakout year, and I really wanted to be this year, because if he can break out in that backcourt that's led with him, Amen Thompson, Fred VanVleet, if that backcourt could be really good, that can set up Sengun so much better this year as well.
Yeah, I just think this team, they lack a defender in the paint. Yeah, Sengun's great. Sengun is never going to help you on the defensive side of the ball. It always makes you wonder, Giannis question mark?
That's a good point. I feel like a lot of these young teams might be prying at Giannis. Like, you know, we talked about the Thunder, and we were obviously backing you down on that, but still, I feel like these young teams that are really starting to, like, make waves, like the Rockets and obviously the Thunder, feel like they're definitely going to be in that conversation in these Giannis sweepstakes.
No question.
When we come back on the Red Zone, we are going to be talking about the state of Chicago sports, more specifically the Chicago Bears. Stick it right here on the Red Zone. WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation, back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster, joined by one of our newest interns, Nate Siak. Nate, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and we're about to go into a little bit of a soapbox here, as we're going to talk basically just the state of Chicago sports, but as I said in the break, more specifically, the Chicago Bears. As this past week, you know, the vibes were high, right up until that Jaden Daniels Hail Mary, and then it's seemingly all going downhill in the Windy City as the Bears lost 29-9 to the Arizona Cardinals. Couldn't put up a touchdown. It was an embarrassment of riches, especially for a Cardinals team that has one of the worst defenses in the National Football League. And I think the biggest thing of it all and the biggest talk amongst sports radio is, what is the Bears' plan going forward in terms of this coaching staff?
To me, that was the biggest problem from the beginning of the year. In the offseason, if you're going to get a new quarterback, you have to reset everything. And I think everybody full-on agreed with that. And they tried to buy in with Eberflus just based off of Hard Knocks. And we saw him so much, we were like, all right, maybe he's got a good look to him now. He looks different now. And it's like everything kind of just felt like it was changing in the offseason, like we had a new culture here. But it's just not that. We're pretty much the same team. We have the same culture. We have the same thing going on every year. It's getting a new quarterback, getting a new head coach the next offseason. It's just not a recipe for success. And when you don't build the O-line, the biggest important team, biggest part of your team, you don't get a new head coach, biggest part of development for your quarterback, he's going to get upset. The guys around him are going to get upset. And you can just see slowly everybody else on the Bears are just not buying into Eberflus. And that's just going to cause so much ruckus for the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I totally agree with you, Julian. And I know that the Bears are planning on sticking with Shane Waldron as a play caller going into next week. I don't know if I agree with that decision. It's tough to make a change mid-season, but yeah, it just hasn't been really good for the Bears.
Just feels like, as you kind of said, it's just the same cycle over and over again, and that's just the hardest part about it. You know, the vibes were as high as you can possibly go heading into that Commanders week, and you know, you finally play two teams that I think are vying for a playoff spot this year. And it just feels like it's just all going downhill again. And kind of like what, it's just the same cycle. We get an offense coordinator. He doesn't know how to call plays. We get a new coach in the first year of quarterback. That coach is going to get fired after this year. So it's just frustrating being a Bears fan, just knowing that it's just the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. My question is, so I know a lot of us, we don't really have too much money in our pockets, but let's say we have enough money to own the Bears. How much money are you giving Ben Johnson this offseason? I don't care what his price tag is. I'm literally giving him everything.
A blank check.
Yeah,
blank
check.
But honestly, to me, the biggest thing is not even just like the head coach thing. They're not going to get a new head coach because the McCaskies control all of that part of the team. They're the ones that I think were the ones that said Eberflus has to come back again, because I think Ryan Poles is a smart enough man to let him go. I think that was more of a McCaskey thing versus Ryan Poles.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think the McCaskey family still thinks like William the Fridge Perry is like walking out there with like Jim McMahon. Like, it's just not the 80s anymore. It's not the style of play where it's just pure defensive grit and then you just win games that way. Like, you need a coach that is more creative offensively while still having that great defensive side of the ball as well. And the Bears just lack that. Like, they lack creativity on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I've been saying this like all year too, and I mean I was a little high on Matt Eberflus when the season started the way it did, but my biggest thing is like, I just wish that they David Rossed him. That's what I keep saying. Jim Harbaugh was out there, and I guarantee you that he would have been like, all right, I'll go back to the team that I used to quarterback for, like no question. And like, it's just, I wish they would just David Rossed him, Matt Eberflus, brought in a coach that knows how to win games in the National Football League at both levels of football, should I say. And, like, you just look at the Chargers right now. The Chargers, they have a great quarterback, but by no means do they have, like, one of the best rosters in the NFL on paper, and they are vying for a playoff spot. And I don't think anyone really expected that, but but the people that did just knew it would have been because of that Jim Harbaugh difference.
Yeah, and I just want to ask a question to everybody on the board. It's just like, what is your expectations for the Bears the rest of the season?
Honestly, not to add more negative energy, but I mean, Billings is probably out for the rest of the season. Obviously, we have a great defense, but if Caleb and the rest of the offense and the coaches can't figure out how they're going to move forward, I don't see the Bears making the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I think your playoff hopes are just dwindling down more and more as the season goes by now. You're going back to the division games now, and you're just not going to win more games and not with that. And what I really care about now is just seeing Rome needs to be the highlight of this offense now.
Yeah.
DJ Moore's kind of bought out, but I think he's going to be fine again. I think it's more of the coaching thing. He's just done with Eberflus, and he's just kind of acting that way to get him out. But Rome Odunze has to be your focal point on the offense now, because anytime he gets the ball, good things happen. And his connection with Caleb is your future now, too. So you got to build that up the rest of this year. But also, you just don't want to get your quarterback hurt, because Eberflus almost got him hurt this game. And I think that was the end of it for him, but they just didn't get let go of him.
And I think the biggest thing we don't talk about either is they have like the toughest schedule remaining in the NFL. Now, did I expect the Bears to make the playoffs? Absolutely not. You know, it's the first year with a quarterback. Like, but it was just more of the fact that the team around him, like, he has some of the best weapons in the NFL. Granted, they're not performing to the capability that we thought they could, but and you know the offensive line was always a problem, but that defense is incredible. And it's just frustrating that it's gone this way. And I don't see that there being an outside path to the playoffs. I think they needed to win the Commanders game and Cardinals game to really have like a good chance and like continue to keep those vibes high.
Yeah, I'm gonna say something, and this is not a comment regarding Caleb Williams' skill, so please hear me out, guys. But at what point do you bench Caleb Williams? Because at this point, Caleb Williams is on track to be the sixth most sacked quarterback in the history of the NFL. He's going to be teaching bad habits. And when you're keeping him in a game where he's about to, where they're already guaranteed to lose and we're risking injury, like, at what point are we just sacrificing his health? Because at the end of the day, this guy is not, well, not this guy, this team is not going to win games. If we just keep throwing him out there to get hurt with an offensive line that's not ready to compete, that worries me with his future.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from, but I just think benching him at this point in the season would just kill his confidence. I think we've seen that happen a lot of times, like with Bryce Young and the Panthers, benching him, putting in Dalton, and then going back to him. I think you just have to stick with Caleb Williams at this point. And, I mean, I think we need to, looking at the future, we need to make some moves on the offensive line to get some protection around Caleb.
Yeah, because that was my big thing, is why did we not make a move at the deadline? We did not attempt to get an offensive lineman. All we did was get rid of Khalil Herbert, and I just think that was a massive disgrace to Williams.
Well, my thing is, you can't really trade for O-linemen in the middle of the season. It's kind of tough to trade for O-linemen, but also I think it's smarter to keep the picks that you have because you could build your linemen through the draft. And the first three picks in the draft either have to be one edge and two linemen, or two linemen and then one edge after that, because those are worst parts of your team. But you can't bench Caleb at all. I don't think you could bench that man because, first of all, he is now the Chicago himself. Like, that dude himself is this whole city now. Mm-hmm. He had so much potential coming in. He still has so much potential going on. And benching him, like you said, it would just kill his confidence now. And you see Jaden Daniels playing great. Imagine seeing Caleb Williams just get benched the same year that you see Jaden Daniels leading the team to the playoffs. Yeah. You can't do that.
Yeah, it just wouldn't work. I mean, he was, since Trevor Lawrence, the most highly touted quarterback ever, and I would say, other than Trevor Lawrence, probably Peyton Manning. So, yeah, it's a tough situation right now. The offensive line is bad, and I think the only thing that I will disagree with you on is we've seen quarterbacks in the past couple years get sacked a lot. And the first name that popped in my mind when you said that was Joe Burrow. And he still managed to, yes, he tore his ACL. It was his rookie season he tore his ACL? Yeah, he tore his ACL in the rookie season. But, you know, after that, we just continue to see steady development. And now he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Mm-hmm. And I think that's still, like, Caleb, it's still there with Caleb. Like, it's been a rough 2 weeks, but just think back to when those three of their wins, he looked really, really good. And I think that's, you know, there's still a shining star in there that's going to come out.
No, because like, I don't want this to be taken the wrong way. Like, I'm not saying bench Caleb because he was playing bad. I'm just more worried about him health-wise. Like, that was not my argument at all, because, as I said, Caleb Williams is an incredible player, and I know he's going to become a Pro Bowler and hopefully an MVP one day. It's just watching him just get killed, especially in a game where the game's over. I'm just worried about throwing him out there when it's just dogs are ready to eat on him.
Well, I guarantee you they're not going to bench him because they left him in for the last minute of a game that was 29-9. So
thanks, Matt.
I do want to say this, though. I think another interesting situation popped up in the media this week, more specifically on a certain play with our star wide receiver that we just extended for 4 more years in DJ Moore. It hasn't been the best year for Moore, and I think everyone's kind of noticed that. And I think it really just comes down to the fact that he hasn't really gotten that connection with Caleb Williams yet. But I think the big play that everyone's talking about is he just gave up on a play. Their excuse was that he thinks he stepped out of bounds, which if that's true, then I mean, I guess that's valid, just taking yourself out to avoid a flag. But still, it's definitely something that I think caught eyes in the media this week.
Yeah, for me, I just don't think this whole city or all the media just was not ready for the ride of a rookie quarterback once again.
Yeah.
Because everybody knew it wasn't going to be perfect, but people just expected us to be a playoff team in the toughest division in football and just thought everything was just going to be peaches and roses right away. But right now, I think DJ just isn't happy with the coaching staff, and I think he's going to be fine, but you just have to pretty much just like be patient with everything.
Yeah, I'd have to say I don't have too many concerns for DJ Moore. I think he has kind of stepped up in his own way as a leader on this team, so that doesn't bother me too much, I don't think.
Yeah, me either, but my biggest concern is, like, I just think more, like, the players just kind of lost the coaching staff. Like, we look at, like, situations like Tyreek Stevenson, now we look at situations with, like, DJ Moore. It's like, I just think everyone's kind of a little bit fed up, and not to go back to the trade talk, but I think that's also another reason why we didn't see the Bears attempt to be buyers of the deadline. Just, they kind of know this is going to be Eberflus's team, so it's just kind of going to be not a complete reset, but we're going to try again in the offseason instead of trying now.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going to happen going forward, and I think everyone's just super down right now because of just the way the last 2 weeks have gone. They have the Patriots this week, which on paper that should be a win, but you never really know with this team right now. I feel like the biggest thing of it all is I was never like, people were calling for his job after week two when they lost to the Colts. They lost to the Colts week two, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's lost the locker room. I think, you know, it was bad when we were having meetings after week two with Shane Waldron, the captains were, and it's just like, oh, we're already having meetings. Like, I feel like we've seen that already with all the other Chicago teams as well. So
nothing beats a Chicago Bulls game one meeting last year.
Oh, my God. That was an all-time so funny. Oh, my God. Yeah, you know, and the thing that frustrates me the most as we all kind of wrap this up together is, when are we just going to have a good team, man? Like, it's just, it's impossible. Like, the White Sox just had the worst record in Major League Baseball history. And I'm not a White Sox fan, but then I look at the Cubs and it's like, oh, we're probably not going to end up spending money this year, even though they have to. The Bears are a dumpster fire per usual. The Blackhawks are slowly developing, but still they can't find ways to win games. And the Bulls are, I don't even know what the Bulls are. Yeah.
I mean, it's just all goes back to the ownership of every single team to me. None of them want to spend money. None of them want to make the tough decisions. And none of them pretty much just like, just notice that they just need to let go of the team and sell the team. Mm-hmm. It just all goes back to ownership because these teams don't pay in the top three market in the city, in the whole nation. And when you don't pay like that, you're not going to win.
Yeah, I think one day we'll get the feeling of a Bears Super Bowl, but I don't know. I don't know when it'll be, man. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking more NFL. We'll be doing our weekly pick six. Stay right here on the Red Zone. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Joey LeMaster, Julian Voss, and Nate Sehak going at it with another week of pick six. Let's take a look at our standings as we continue to bulldoze through this season. Week 10 already. That's nuts. It's crazy. But it feels good because I love the winter and Thanksgiving football. It's the best. All right, Julian, 35-19, continues to hold on to that lead at the top with Steve right behind him, a game with 34-20 on the season. Myself in third by four. I'm up by four games to Steve at 30-24. And Joey and the guest alone in last place, or I should say together in last place at 29-25. We've been trying to get this guest spot to get like a big week, and it's been a long time since then. It has not been good. So Nate, you better bring the picks for that guest spot.
I'll see what I can do.
All right, let's start with tonight, an AFC North matchup between the Bengals and Ravens. Over the last couple of years, it feels like the Ravens have owned the Bengals' number, even though the Bengals continue to just really be one of the best teams over the last couple of years, but they're still struggling a little bit this year. But Joe Burrow has been one of the best quarterbacks in football, and I think the MVP favorite is currently quarterbacking for the Baltimore Ravens, which would be his third, which is just absurd to me that he's on pace to win his third MVP. It's crazy. Joey, I'll start with you.
Yeah, but that pace for the third MVP is going to stop tonight because there's another quarterback that's also hungry for this MVP win. And I think we've been waiting for like a massive Joe Burrow performance in a big time game. And I think we're going to see that tonight against the Ravens. I'm riding with the Bengals.
This is a tough game for me because I feel like the Bengals, just like you said, they're itching for that big win, but the Ravens also want to get that big in-division win as well because that's going to matter a lot for their playoff seeding. So I'm going to be safe and say the Ravens, but I would not be surprised at all if the Bengals win.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you guys. I think it's going to be the Ravens taking it home tonight. Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow have been phenomenal this year. They combined for 8 passing touchdowns last week. So, and I just think the Ravens' offensive weapons will win the game for them tonight.
I'm just hoping for a shootout. We finally got a good primetime game on Monday between the Bucks and Chiefs, and it felt good because it feels like primetime games, it's so hard to get one this year. But, the Bengals are down a lot, at least T. Higgins, so I think that could play a big factor. And the Ravens have just dominated this season. But I don't know what it is about the Bengals. I've been picking against them a lot this year, and I really like Joe Burrow. So I'm gonna ride the Bengals tonight. I don't know what it is, but I just got a weird feeling about Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and the rest of those fellas. But going into Baltimore, it's going to be a tough environment for Joe Burrow and them. But we'll see how it ends up going. All right, we already talked about them for the last 15 minutes, so we don't have to talk any more about the Bears. The Patriots, though, quarterbacked by Drake May, who has actually looked very, very solid thus far in his rookie season. I don't think Patriots fans are complaining too much with how he has played. But this is two teams that feel like they're going in the same direction right now in terms of wins and losses. So, Joey, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm not going to be as excited with this one because I know I like to hype up the Bears. Just they have no right to get this hype up. It's just the Bears, they need a win so bad. And if Caleb Williams loses to Drake May and Jaden Daniels in his rookie season, there's just going to be so many headlines. I don't think they can afford that. So I'm just going to ride with the Bears.
Yeah, this might be my last time picking the Bears the rest of the season to win a game. But I'm going to take them this last game because I don't think the Patriots are that great. We're obviously not that great, but I think we're a little bit better. So I'm going to take the Bears on this one.
Yeah, I'm gonna take the Bears as well. I think if DeAndre Swift is able to get going on the ground, I just think that Patriots run defense is not the greatest, so I'm gonna have to take the Bears on this one too.
Yeah, I'm gonna ride the Bears. I know I've been picking against them, and then I changed it last week. Once again, if the Bears end up losing this game this week, I will be riding against the team that picks them going forward, just because I want the Bears to get wins. But they need this win. The Patriots are not good. I like Mayo. I feel like the culture is definitely like it hasn't shifted really from Belichick to Mayo. But they just need this win. They're at home too, which is a good thing because Matt Eberflus can't win on the road. he's never won a road game on a Sunday, right?
No.
It's only been Mondays and Thursday nights that he's won road games. That's insane. All right. Well, the Bears are at home. They got to beat the Patriots. They need this win badly, and I'm just going with my heart on this one. All right. Next up. 49ers and Buccaneers. The 49ers got a big win against the Cowboys last Sunday, and they are looking to turn the tides as their star running back Christian McCaffrey is expected to return this week. A huge win for that team as they just continue to be knocked up with injuries. And meanwhile, the Buccaneers, well, they got off to a really hot start, and Baker continues to be one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League. Injuries have absolutely killed them. You could tell how hard it's been for Baker Mayfield to really connect with these other receivers now that Chris Godwin and Mike Evans are out. So, Joey, I'll start with you. Who are you leaning in this matchup?
Yeah, this is the battle of injured teams. I'm just going to run with a team that I've been able to trust more in the past. I know the Buccaneers are hot, and Baker Mayfield's on a hot streak as well. But I know Baker Mayfield is super turnover prone. I just trust Brock Purdy, especially having his best weapon back. I'm going to be riding with the 49ers this week.
Yeah, I'm agree with you. I'm going to go with the Niners because both these teams are very injured, but the Buccaneers are also coming off of a short week, so that's also going to affect them a little bit more with their injuries and everything too. So I think with McCaffrey coming back most likely, and this team just pretty much runs around McCaffrey, I got them on this one.
Yeah, this was a tough choice for me. I think if the 49ers put out McCaffrey and give him a full workload like he's used to, I think the 49ers could definitely come away with this game, but I just don't see that happening with his first week back considering the nature of his injury, so I'm going to take the Bucs here.
Steve also picking the Bucs in this one. It's an interesting matchup, but I got to ride the 49ers. I don't know what it is about having Christian McCaffrey back is, once again, Brock Purdy's number one weapon. And I feel like Jordan Mason has really started to slow down. Like, when he came into this offense at the beginning of the year, I feel like Debo wasn't hurt and Brandon Ayuk wasn't hurt. Kittle's had some injury problems, so it went, at the beginning of the year, it really opened it up for Jordan Mason. But ever since then, it's just been really going downhill for him. So I think they're going to love to have Christian McCaffrey back. And, yeah, I just think they're going to continue to ride this hot streak that they're on. And they've looked really good, so I'm going to ride the 49ers on this one. All right, Sunday night. Probably one of the best Sunday night matchups you can ask for. Two of the best young teams in the National Football League this year. The Lions, 7-1, went into Green Bay this past weekend and just absolutely dominated. Amon-Ra St. Brown is doing touchdown dances on his head. We talked about Ben Johnson. He's just one of the best play callers I've ever seen in my lifetime. Jared Goff, once again, an early MVP favorite. Meanwhile, the Texans continue to find ways to win games, but once again, they are really hurt in terms of receivers, and I think this is one of the best games of the year.
Yeah, I feel like it's been week after week where I keep saying the Texans are just due for a big one, and they just have not given it to me, so like I don't really trust them at the moment, and just how could you bet against the Detroit Lions with the run they're on right now? It's just, this team is electric at the moment. They're firing at all cylinders, and I think they'll keep it going. I mean, they won in the Lambeau and won effortlessly. I think they can just go into Houston and do the same thing.
Yeah, this is going to be a great game, but I think it all depends on if Nico Collins is playing, but I don't think he's supposed to going to play this week. I think he's kind of doubtful right now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the Lions just because of that, but if Nico Collins ends up playing, it's going to be a way closer game than I think.
Yeah, I have to go with the Texans on this one. It's a huge primetime game for both teams. I think coming off that loss against the Jets, I feel like CJ Stroud's maybe got a little bit of fire, wants to give a win to the home teams or give a win to the Texans fans at home. So, but yeah, I definitely expect this to be an exciting game. I think the Texans come away with it.
Take a guess who Steve took.
I don't know. Yeah.
Steve went with the Lions. He's obviously a fan of the Lions. Kind of what Joey said, I just can't bet against Detroit Lions right now. I said at the beginning of the year, and I was talking to Steve about it earlier this week, and I can't believe I mentioned them twice in this episode, but there's something about Detroit Lions and the fact that they've never won anything, that they've been historically bad. It just has, for some reason, going into this year, it has like that 2016 Cubs feeling. Like when we went into 2016, it was like, yeah, there's something about this team that just feels like they're going to win it all. And that's exactly what I'm feeling with the Lions. I don't know what, it's just the way that offense runs. Aiden Hutchinson was a huge loss, but, you know, they just got a pass rusher,
Za'Darius Smith.
So, yeah, you can't bet against the Lions right now. Just what they did to Green Bay last week, who Green Bay has also been one of the better teams in football this year, it just shows how good these Lions are, and it's really just a different team, and they look phenomenal. All right, let's go to Monday night, the Dolphins and the Rams. Tua is back for the Dolphins. They got a win last week. No, they ended up losing.
They lost.
Yeah, so two losses in a row for the Dolphins since Tua's been back. But still, they've looked a lot more functional since Tua has put back on the pads for them. And meanwhile, the Rams are riding one of the hottest win streaks in the National Football League right now. They got that win 2 weeks ago against the Vikings and won in an overtime thriller against the Seahawks, even with Puka Nacua punching random dudes for no reason. He had that Dana White in him. They're related. You know that, right?
Really?
Yeah, you never knew that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Puka and Dana are related.
That's so random.
He's like his uncle.
I did not know that.
They kind of look alike, too. Like, you
could
see it in the face. No, I think you could see it in the face.
You think so?
Yes.
I don't see it.
As soon as I found that out, I was like, it kind of makes sense. Now, obviously not the hair, but all right, whatever. Dolphins, Rams. Joey, I'll start with you.
Sean McVay is one of the best coaches we've ever seen grace the sport of football. And I know Mike McDaniels is fun, but Sean McVay is what we like to call a genius. And the Rams, they're on a streak now. They're finally hot. They're starting to get their weapons back. And I feel bad for Miami because, like, this is supposed to be a good season for them, but they're just going to keep losing games. I'm riding with the Rams. Big Stafford guy here.
I think this is a bad matchup for the Rams because they have a bad passing defense, and the Dolphins have great weapons. So I think the Dolphins are going to win this one. It's going to be a shootout just based on them having better weapons on offense versus the Rams defense.
Yeah, I can see this one being a really good game. And like you said, Ben, Rams are riding really hot right now. They have topped the league numbers on defense over their last three games. So I'm going to have to ride with the Rams. I do think, though, if Tua and that Tyree connection can come out tonight, that it could be a very close game.
Yeah, I'm also going to go with the Rams. There's just something about them right now. It feels eerily similar to what they did last year, where it was a slow start, and then Matt Stafford just put the team on his back. Cooper Kupp's fully back now. Puka's back. After punching a dude last week, we already said it. But, yeah, I don't know what it is about the Rams. The Dolphins I feel bad for because they're so much better than they have actually, like, shown this year. But it's just I think it's just a fact of the matter of they haven't had the right hand. Like, they've just gotten in the tough matchups. They should have won that Cardinals game 2 weeks ago, but still, I'm going to ride the Rams on this one. Did Julian pick the Dolphins?
Yeah, I picked the Dolphins.
Okay, sorry. I was zoned out at that point. All right. our pick six game of the week, as voted on by you guys, the people at home on Instagram. Our pick six game of the week. I would never expected that this was going to be our game going into...
Colin Chaitis was locked in.
I would never expect it going into this year, but here we are, the Steelers and Commanders. The Steelers just keep finding ways to win game, especially with Sussy Russie at quarterback. And meanwhile, the Commanders, coming off a bye week, their vibes are obviously high, and just acquired cornerback Marshawn Lattimore to bolster up that defense. Joey, who are we going with in this
both
one?
Both these teams made big moves at the deadline. The Steelers also getting Preston Smith and Mike Williams, so it's going to be interesting to see how both these guys are implemented in. It's just this Steelers defense is so good. TJ Watt is one of these guys I'm just not going to bet against. And if Jaden Daniels can beat the Steelers defense, the Commanders might go really far
in
the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a good game between a rookie quarterback and a veteran quarterback, but that's going to be a future Hall of Famer. I got the Steelers just based on their quarterback being a vet. But if the Commanders do, like you said, if they do end up winning this game, that's going to speak volumes for this team because this team is so young. They've made some really good acquisitions, and I don't know. If they win this one, it's going to be very interesting to see what they can do the rest of the way.
Yeah, the Steelers have been phenomenal this year. I think Mike Tomlin and the Steelers are able to pull out a win against the Commanders this week. We saw Jaden Daniels struggle a little bit against the Bears defense, and I think he'll have similar struggles against Pittsburgh this week.
Looks like we're a steal, Ben.
Yeah, we're going clean sweep.
Really?
I'm going with the Steelers. Wow. I really doubted them at the beginning of this year, but, I mean, Mike Tomlin is like the greatest coach ever. He just finds a way to win. The greatest coach ever that can go 9-8 every season and make the playoffs. He's phenomenal. But the Commanders, yes, they are on a super high hot streak right now and continue to find ways to win games. But there's just something about the Steelers that I've really liked this year, and they've been fun to watch. Also, like, the reemergence of Najee Harris has been fun to watch as well. Like, he's actually, like, kind of playing like how they expected him to, and it's been cool to see. All right, that's all for Pick 6. Nate, thank you so much for joining the show. It was a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. Once again, we're here every week from 6 to 7, so make sure to stay tuned right here every week on The Red Zone.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson looking out, drives inside, going to find Mary Crompton for her first three of the day, and it's good!
Curry owned the league last year, and personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
JD, I've got five.